We get bonuses in radio sometimes.
We do?
Well, we're supposed to. I've never really worked in a situation.
You get bonuses sometimes.
Well, let me rephrase that. I'm eligible for bonuses sometimes in radio. Performance-based. It doesn't mean I get them. But I don't know. I can't imagine what it would be like. Now, being like on commission or something, I get that. That's kind of a bonus. You know, you work harder, you excel, you get more money. I can't imagine Adam Vinatieri, though, who, if you, you know, we talked about the Buffalo-Colts game on Sunday. I like how Mike Florio over at Pro Football Talk said they played on Hoth. And if you're a Star Wars nerd, you know what we're talking about.
I just did a Star Wars tweet.
Oh, did you?
I did.
What'd you say?
I said, one more day until I have an excuse to get a tattoo of a porg.
See, I knew you were all that. You kids love the porgs.
Dude.
So do I.
Yeah. It's your Twitter avatar.
I'll have my, by the way, for those of you wondering, I'm going to try to sneak into a daytime showing either Friday or Monday, probably Monday. I'll have my Star Wars review out as one of my blogs next week. A highly awaited Carmichael Dave review of Star Wars. When the last movie came out, The Force Awakens or whatever, it was a highly controversial review I put out. I gave it 3 of 10. I gave it 3 of 10 and just got...
3, the same amount of points you get for a field goal.
And you know what? You see Kyle bringing it all back. That's fantastic. Adam Vinatieri had to kick in those conditions. He missed twice. And you know what? You can forgive him because he couldn't probably see the field goal posts things. It's the official term. Well, what happened is he missed a potential game winner from 43 and a 33-yarder. Said the footing was the toughest he's ever dealt with. That was an 0-for-2 day for Adam Vinatieri, which is way, way, way uncharacteristic for a guy who's literally won Super Bowls with his leg. What happened is it dropped his percentage from 95.6 to 88. He had only missed one kick all year. He's now 22-25 with those two misses. He gets $500,000 if he gets to 90% on field goals this season. He's been over 90% 5 times in his previous 21 seasons. But in order to get that now, Kyle, he's got to hit his next 5 field goals to get back over 90. Good news being 2 of his 3 remaining games are at home, where he plays in a dome. This just in, probably will not be dealing with snow inside the dome. Which goes back to me in Buffalo again and wondering, I've been struggling with this question all week. Forget about the money and the finances and all that. Should Buffalo play in a dome? I mean, if you're in that situation, should you play in a dome? If you're in a place like Buffalo, would the world be better? Would football be better if you played that in a dome?
No.
Because that's real football weather?
Because that, not...
No, I'm not being snarky.
Not necessarily, but I bet that game got more eyeballs and more social media chatter because of the weather than it would have had the Bills just beat the Colts by 10 in a dome.
I agree with you. Clear your throat. However, is part of that because you're dealing with two teams that basically nobody cares about that aren't very good, with the exception of the Bills, who are the players? Don't get me wrong, but the Bills are not. Nobody's getting excited over Bills on Sunday Night Football. What if that was Carolina and New Orleans playing in those conditions?
That would be awesome.
For a game that mattered.
The great equalizer, man.
Okay. What if a Super Bowl was played in those conditions?
I was rooting for it when it was in New York.
Really?
Oh, I want a 2-0 Super Bowl. Is it the highest quality of play that the NFL has to offer? No. The opposite, probably. But that is so much fun to me. And perhaps people disagree.
I think that it's kind of janky. Like, you don't really know who the better team is.
Sure. But watching teams try and kick mundane 30-yard field goals and missing...
It's entertaining.
And punts going 20 yards.
It's very entertaining.
And yes, you say you don't know who the better team is, but I think on a neutral field, I think the Bills kind of boringly beat the Colts like 21-10.
I agree with you because they're a better team.
Yeah.
I don't want the luck of the draw as far as weather goes, spinning the weather wheel, deciding who wins a championship or who wins a game. That's my problem. If I have a team, if I know that I'm going into a game like that, what am I going to do? I'm going to build my team around defense and run and
sure.
My running game.
Yeah.
But what if you're a team? What if you're the Rams? Well, it's, you know, they have Todd Gurley. But what if you're a team that excels in the air?
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden you just happen to play a team on a snowy day. Well, that doesn't mean you're the better team. It means you're the better team in those conditions. Whereas in a dome or under clear skies,
then you're the better team in those conditions.
In those conditions. But don't you want it to be on a neutral field? Don't you want – I don't want weather to be one team's best player in a game that matters. I want to know two teams on a neutral field without weather. That's where I want to know who has the better team.
I mean, I guess. That doesn't make it less entertaining to watch for me, though. I guess my goal is not who's the better team when I'm watching a Super Bowl. I want to be entertained.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, the winner
is the winner, and so be it. The 49ers were a better team than the Ravens the year that the Ravens won the Super Bowl. The Patriots were the better team than the Giants twice. It's very much matchups and who's injured. And I mean, Rob Gronkowski plays healthy in that second Patriots Super Bowl with the Giants. They probably win it.
A lot of Raider fans are probably listening, saying that the Raiders were the better team.
Yes,
than the Patriots in the Tuck Rule
game. That's absolutely a fact. And I mean, there are just so many factors that go in. We very rarely get the best team winning it all. So a game in the snow is wildly entertaining to me because it's so different than the norm.
It's interesting.
And there are so many things that factor in where all the regular football norms that we are used to seeing, all the traditional game scripts and play calls and, third and six, they're going to go play action here. They're going to throw it. Second and three, they're going to go play action. Well, maybe they won't. And it's just, it's so much fun. And watching LeSean McCoy get the corner and go score a touchdown and then watching everybody freak out and play in the snow, that was fun. I enjoyed that very much.
The texter just stole my next point. It's a great text because my point was going to be amazing. But it is akin to...
I wish I could... The wireless is down right now,
so I don't have...
No.
Well, good. There's an element of surprise for you.
Perfect. Oh, there it is. I got it back.
It brings Let's up go. The idea of it being very similar to over par rounds at the U.S. Open. U.S. Open notorious for just making the courses insanely difficult to play. The greens are like putting on a sliding glass door laid on its side. And I think that it's very similar for me in how I feel about football in the snow, where it is enjoyable. I remember there's been a couple games in Chicago at Soldier Field where the wind was so bad. And I remember one in particular a few years back where the balls, you know, the kicker would try to kick a field goal, and the ball would just almost blow back to him damn near. That is entertaining. I'm not going to lie. It is. You bring up solid points. But it's the same thing. Like, if every golf course was like that, was cut like the U.S. Open, I don't know that I'd like that. I want these athletes, I want these players to be, I don't want in a snow situation, I don't want an entire part of a game taken away. I don't want a deep threat taken away because you can't see the guy past 20 yards.
Well, no, and I'm not saying I want every game played like that in the snow, but if we had, if there was one year they're like, yeah, the Super Bowl is going to be played in 3 degrees in a blizzard, I'm in. I'm absolutely in. That's so far off the beaten path that I think that would be so much fun. Betting on that game would be insane. You would have.
You got to put an asterisk on the championship almost.
No, you don't.
If you've got it, if you've got the greatest show on turf, you know, you've got an air team. And you they're playing against a team that's defense and running.
Nobody cares. That game is not going to get an asterisk.
Yeah, there you go.
It's going to be known as the Snow Bowl.
Sure, of course. Much
and
like you
it's going to be a legendary game. We've got the Ice Bowl. We have so many legendary games like that. That's how a Super Bowl in the snow would go down. It would not be remembered as, boy, that was a low quality game. People would go, man, remember the Snow Bowl where they only threw 14 times combined for 46 yards? Oh yeah, that was crazy. And remember when that fullback nobody heard of had 4 touchdowns? I'm in.
So you think a Super Bowl, and I won't go too extreme. Let's say that last Sunday's game was the extreme.
Yeah.
But let's say 75% of that. You know, it's tough to see the field. You've got guys getting tackled in giant snow flurries.
No, awesome.
You would be okay with that in a Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Wow. I feel like this conversation's a little bit weird. I feel like I'm kind of taking the millennial side, and you're kind of taking the throwback old school side. This is kind of a weird trade going on here.
Yeah, I bet you want to watch your Super Bowl in your nice weather so you can drink Chardonnay with your avocado Gouda.
Tell you what I'd like to see in the snow. You know what would be kind of fun in icy conditions would be tennis. Tennis, when guys are just slipping all over the place.
Every once in a while, they should have hockey games on melted ice. It's called water polo, bub.
Fournette territory is next. Yep, Aaron Rodgers is back. Also, the playoffs in the NFC, are we done looking? And Carson Wentz, what do we do with his MVP candidacy? And do the next few games count? It's the drive back in 3. Fournette territory next. Sports 1140 KHDK.
On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being no chance, 10 being definitely, how likely is it that Aaron Rodgers gets the Packers to the playoffs?
Let's see here. If it's anybody else but Aaron Rodgers with that schedule, it's 2. I'm going to say a 4. And what I mean by that is I think it's less likely. I would give them a 40% shot to make the playoffs. Dude, you got Detroit, Minnesota, and Carolina as your 3 remaining games, 2 of those being on the road. Yeah. Those are 2 fantastic teams, and then 1 divisional game with Detroit. That's not going to be a walkover. And you're asking a guy coming back from that injury to just come back and be, even if he was the Aaron Rodgers on his best day, that's very, very difficult. I think one cool side note is a lot of people have been eliminated from their fantasy football playoffs, in part because they had Jordy Nelson or Devontae Adams or whatever.
Right.
Watch those guys just go off now in the last 3 games and mean absolutely nothing. But no, Kyle, I'd say a 4.
Yeah, 4. Four, somewhere between a 4 and a 6. Give me a 5. 50%.
Wow, 50-50, huh?
Yeah, I think if they beat Carolina, I think that goes up to like a 7.
Second down.
All right, Bills and Titans, the 5 and 6 seed in the AFC. Let's assume 1 makes the playoffs. Which is it?
I think the Titans are a better team. I think the Titans are absolutely a better team. They're 8-5. They're second in the AFC South. But the Bills are also playing. The Titans are playing the Niners in San Francisco. You think they're going to lose this game?
I do.
I think they're going to win this game. I really think they're going to win this game.
They have to if they want to make the playoffs.
But then they follow that up home Rams, home Jaguars. Great that they're both home games. But those are two phenomenal football teams. That's a very difficult ask. Whereas you look at the Bills, home Dolphins, at Patriots, at Dolphins. I think the Bills and Titans both probably go 1-2 down the stretch. That's going to leave, if the Titans are going to sneak in, they're going to sneak in with that. I'd say the Titans have the edge.
Yeah, I think so too.
Thought all that out while we were talking, by the way.
Yeah. It's got to be the Titans, because the Titans are still in a position to win their division. The Bills really aren't.
No, they're not at all. But man, that's tough. Mariota's going to have to be on fire.
Yeah.
By the way, isn't Kenny Britt a former Titans wide receiver?
He is.
Well, you keep referencing him as what, a former Browns receiver?
Well, he was most recently a Browns receiver.
TitansWire.com.
TitansWire.com.
Third down.
Are the six NFC playoff teams set?
Yeah, I think so. Now the Packers sneak in. There's that.
So you've got Eagles, Vikings, Rams, Saints, Panthers, Falcons are the top six.
Yeah.
In some order, are those going to be our six NFC playoff teams?
I think so. I think so. The only one, even though, and you'll remember this preseason, mind you, I called the Rams winning the NFC West.
You did.
But the Rams are going into Seattle this weekend. And then they play in Tennessee, and then they have the Niners. That's going to be very, very interesting, because they currently have a one-game lead over Seattle. Seattle wins this game this weekend. They finish in Dallas. Dallas is kind of a shell of who they were. But they will have Ezekiel Elliott back. And then they finish against the Cardinals. I would take Seattle's schedule the rest of the year. The question is, can they make that up? But yes, I think the NFC is set. I think the only thing we really, and we thought the NFC was set, by the way, 2 weeks ago, did we not? I think the AFC is the only question left.
Yeah, there's nobody in the NFC. Seattle, Detroit, even if Green Bay makes a run, Green Bay's run is super improbable. I think we've got the six teams.
Fourth down.
Is Carson Wentz the MVP regardless of how this season ends?
I don't think so. Their final three games, they're in New York facing the Giants. That should be a win. But if they lose at home to the Raiders and then they lose at home to the Cowboys, and what I mean is that the Eagles almost have to lose two of their last three, if not all three of their last. Let's say they lose all three of their last three. Well, that's going to strengthen the case for Carson Wentz, obviously. But I'm going to tell you right now, man, and if it doesn't happen, it's going to be one of those, well, Michael Jordan couldn't win it every year. I still think Tom Brady's going to end up being your MVP. I still think Tom Brady at 10-3, and that's after that loss to the Dolphins, they finish up that huge game this weekend in Pittsburgh against the Steelers. But if they're able to win out, Steelers, home Bills, home Jets, if they're able to win out and Tom Brady takes his team to 13-3, I mean, geez, ask yourself right now, and if you're not a Patriots fan, this should be a little bit difficult for you. We know Brandon Cooks is a wide receiver for them. We know Rob Gronkowski, when he plays, is their tight end. But start thinking about how many wide receivers that are playing, that are healthy, and how many running backs are playing for the Patriots. But here we are again. And remember, by the way, you want to know how good Bill Belichick is and that staff? Hey, remember in the first few games of the season, Kyle, we were talking about there's no way the Patriots could win the Super Bowl because of their defense?
Yep.
Yeah. They figured that out on the fly.
Yeah, Tom Brady of 40 carried that team for the first, 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And he's playing some of the best football of his life. I think it goes overlooked because we're so used to it. But with no Wentz over the final 3 weeks, if the Patriots can go in, beat the Steelers this week, wind up with the one seed, and win out, I think we get Tom Brady's MVP.
Sneaky, by the way, if Pittsburgh wins out, including against the Patriots this weekend, none of them will win the MVP, but you know, you've got three guys splitting some votes there. That's the problem.
Also, for Antonio Brown, the MVP case, he is dangerously close to going for a 2,000-yard season.
The quietest 2,000-yard season.
Unbelievable.
In, you know, you'll ever see. We'll take a break when we get back. Greg Papa will join us. We got a Raiders loss to talk about, and they've still got season left. He's next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK. Hey, guys and girls, as we wait for Greg Papa to join us in just a couple minutes, and lots of Kings talk as they win last night. We'll get back to that at 8 a.m. Want to point out to you guys, if you don't have this yet, go to your app store, your what is it for Android, the Google Store thing?
Google Play Store.
Thank you.
I think it's store where you play the Googles.
I think it's actually the Google Store thing.
Google Store.
Get the KHDK app. It's amazing. Yeah. It's really good. And listen, let me be just honest here. In radio and sometimes with us, sometimes things aren't good.
Sometimes things are bad.
Sometimes things are really bad. I really want to shout out our entire web staff, because our website at khdk.com, and I can say this now because we're out of it, our website at khdk.com is 1 trillion times better than it was a couple of months ago. And that is no fault to our web staff. There were some, you had like 9 billion ads on there, and now you can go in, you can read stuff. It's nice. It's clean. It's concise. It's enjoyable. The content is questionable because it's done in many cases by people like us, but hey, we try. And the app, when I was listening to the station back when I was on the East Coast last week, dude, you open the app, you hit play now, that's it. You're in.
I was when I first heard we had an app, I went to download it and was like, all right, I guess I'll have it just so I know what it looks like. And it was like, oh, this is really, it was clean. A lot of times places will try and just jam in a bunch of unnecessary features, or like they'll just put every gizmo and gadget they can when developing the app. But this is all very, very clean and straightforward. It's very easy to use.
No, 100%. So
we're not even getting paid for this.
No. And we don't even have one of those things where genuine. We're supposed to read this. This is just, we haven't talked about this enough. And I know people, and thank you guys so much for this. Obviously, if you're trying to find different ways to take in our content, we appreciate that because, hey, that's our job and what we're trying to do. We want to make it easy for you. So obviously, listening on the radio is the easiest way to do it. But listen, grab the app, whether you're in town, out of town, whatever. And you've also got your show pages, easy connections to the podcast, to previous shows. And don't forget, by the way, speaking of course, you can follow us all day on Twitter and follow at The Drive 1140. That's our official show page. And search The Drive 1140 on Facebook. Come say hi. I got to post a few things more on the Facebook page. I've let that kind of go, but that's where you can get directed to all our podcasts. So go on the Facebook page, say hello, and be a part of the team. Speaking of Twitter, I was wondering about this. I want to blow the guy up in case it's a secret thing. But Greg Papa, voice of the Raiders and our Raiders insider, appearing with us every Wednesday at 7:35. Greg, are you on Twitter?
I am not.
Okay. You're a smart man.
That does not mean I don't follow people on Twitter, but I personally do not send tweets.
You're a smart man.
I don't quite understand. What would be my reason for doing that?
Well, I mean, if I'm being honest, and again, I'll say you're smart for it because you get caught up in this. But if I'm devil's advocate, I would say, I'm not trying to, kiss your ass here, but as the voice of the Raiders, as a guy with your shows, as a guy who can speak on pretty much any Bay Area sport and beyond, I think there's people out there that would be interested in your thoughts.
I understand why they would follow me.
Sure.
What would be my motivation for doing it?
You would argue, I don't know, you can drive content to your shows.
Could I make money doing it?
Indirectly. Greg, you're building your brand.
I don't think I need to build my brand. I spend a lot of my hours actually talking on radio and television. So if I'm not going to be compensated for it, I'm going to do other things with my time. So that's why I choose not to do it.
Well, you were compensated, I would hope, for calling the game last weekend. Obviously not the result we wanted. And you know, I know we don't like to use the must win, this, that, whatever, but this they're behind the eight ball. It's all but assured that this will not be a playoff year for the Raiders. We don't want to do a post-mortem on the team yet, but just focusing on that game itself, what did you feel was the biggest issue you could put your finger on?
Every single thing.
Wow.
There wasn't anything that they should be proud of at all. From Marquette King having a miserable day punting, to the offensive line having the same issues they've had periodically, to Derek Carr throwing the ball to Raiders that are not open, to the coaching staff allowing Amari Cooper to play in the game when I don't think he was healthy, a lack of design and creativity to free up your other receivers who are not great route runners, any of them, to even in the fourth quarter when they came back, the game management was chaotic, the lack of situational football. And I know if you're watching the game on CBS, Kevin Harlan and Rich Gannon, who were both friends of mine, they moved on to the thing, so they didn't concentrate. Michael Crabtree not going out of bounds to stop the clock. Cordero Patterson not going out of bounds to stop the clock. Jack Del Rio not calling timeouts when the Chiefs are on offense extinguishing the clock. And you wind up landing the game with a timeout in your pocket. And I know you had no chance. I mean, it was 26-0. You got a couple of garbage touchdowns. Not throwing to Jared Cook earlier in the game when that was the one mismatch the Raiders had. Do you want me to go on?
Nah.
The lack of tackling. Dexter McDonald just can't play because he cannot tackle. I think he covers pretty well, but his just turning down tackles and not tackling when he's there is a huge problem, and the opponents know it. So I could go through the whole team and every guy on the roster, but I'll stop there. It was just a complete and utter system-wide failure, and it leads you to believe that maybe they're not as close as we think they are. Maybe they're not as talented as we think they are, or maybe they're being insufficiently coached and prepared to play, because that's not, and I don't agree with the fact the season's over. I think they could still do this. I think they could win the next three. You don't know. But I don't know when the talent's going to rise up. I don't know why they're not bringing it out. I don't know about the lack of ferocity to open games and thought. So there have been other bad performances. The game in Mexico City was a disaster. The game in Washington was embarrassing. But the importance of this game and knowing them so well, having played against them on that Thursday night and played so well and just offensively, It's beyond bewildering how they just seemed like there were times, Dave, when it looked like it was the first day of training camp.
Yeah.
And Kansas City was so perfectly prepared for the game. They executed so precisely for three quarters of that game. I'm thinking, are these two teams in the same league, let alone the same division? Wasn't even close.
Well, let me take something you said that I think is interesting and ask you. You mentioned maybe the Raiders aren't there yet talent-wise. Maybe the Raiders are being insufficiently coached and prepared. Do you lean more one way or the other?
Well, they're young. I think your three main stars, Derek, Khalil, and Amari, are young. And their inexperience and their lack of big games in the NFL is showing. Derek is just playing poorly. There's no other way to say it. And I think some of it early in the game was poor choices on where to go with the ball. He's throwing to covered players repeatedly. I think he's having a hard time dealing with the pass rush, when to escape. His pocket presence has deteriorated. I don't know. I don't think he's hurt. People think he's hurt. I don't think he's hurt. I think it's a product of training his brain to not be his brother and not get his head beat in like his brother did. And I've talked to him many times about it. He's been open about it, that he does not want to be his brother. But there are times you got to stand in there and just hold the ball a little longer and let guys uncover. And if they're not open, you know, sometimes you throw 50-50 balls. I get it. But I don't see a lot of Julio Joneses on this roster. So you got to get out of there. You got to keep plays alive. You got to, you know, elongate the play so things break down. Alex Smith does that repeatedly. And then Amari Cooper should not have played in this game. And there's no other way to say it. I watched him warm up before the game. He was not healthy. So they trusted him to say he was fine. I don't know what they saw in the practice field. He was not healthy warming up before the game. He could not cut on that ankle. And whether they wanted to use him as a decoy or not, he couldn't get any separation against Darrell Revis. He was not open on that ball down the sideline. And so just I go on and on about it. But yeah, as far as the coaching staff, I don't know. You know, you can change coordinators all you want. And that's, you know, to me, to some degree, that slows down Derek's growth if you keep doing that. He had Greg Olsen when he was a rookie. You wind up firing Dennis Allen. You have an interim coach. You bring in the new coach. He fires the coordinator. So you go from Greg Olsen to Bill Musgrave to Todd Downing to the next guy. So Derek needs continuity. And I think that's a part of what's going on here. And it's just the head coach got a 4-year contract extension, so I don't think you're going to do that. But I think you have to look at his game management and situational football. He doesn't run really either side of the ball. He has more of an influence on defense. But the lack of situational football and 2-minute drill, the chaotic nature. Go back and watch the 2-point conversion to Michael Crabtree. They barely got that play snapped. The only reason they got it off is they were so disorganized in their personnel that Kansas City didn't know how to defend them because they didn't know what the hell the Raiders were going to do because the Raiders didn't know what the hell they were going to do. So it's just a lot of things. That if you look at and you're looking at it from the owner's box or the general manager's suite, it's these are the questions you're asking. Why are my young players not getting better? Why are we lacking in the fundamentals and the organization of precise situational football? That's how you get to the next level. That's how the Warriors got to be the Warriors, going from Mark Jackson to Steve Kerr. It's the little things. It's just they're way behind the rest of the league or the good teams. There are a lot of bad football. A lot of bad teams do these things. The good teams don't do it.
Raiders were down 26-0 going into the fourth. We all watched the game. When you look at the box score and you see Oakland outscored the Chiefs 15-0 in the fourth, is that indicative of the Raiders waking up a little bit, or is that indicative of the Chiefs just letting off the pedal?
I don't care. I'm more disappointed in the fact that they didn't take more advantage of it. Because there were times Michael Crabtree could have gotten out of bounds before the 2-minute warning. Cordero Patterson could have gotten out of bounds. The mismanagement of clocks, Jack not calling timeout. Go back and watch their last drive. 40 seconds are extinguishing on you play after play after play, and they're not calling timeout. So I dismiss it completely. Kansas City played a softer shell, and the Raiders finally decided to throw the ball to the tight end. That's the one matchup, and the chief coaches came up to me after the game and said, I don't know why you guys didn't throw to Jared Cook. That's the one guy we couldn't cover. They don't have Eric Berry. Daniel Sorensen's okay at it. That, you know, if they're going to play man, they played a lot of man. You could have thrown the ball to Jared Cook more. They didn't use the middle of the field. So, no, it looks like, wow, they came alive in the fourth quarter. I don't look at it that way. I think it was even more chaotic. And it's just a product of the Chiefs. You know, you're playing the clock there. You don't care. This is not, college football where you're trying to win by so many points. You just want to win by a half a point. They don't care. And they're going to let you drive and do whatever it is as long as you don't do it on the first play. They're going to let you run the clock out. And just the Raiders' lack of awareness of the situations, Crabtree and Patterson not getting out of bounds, not calling timeouts. No, I don't look at that fourth quarter as a plus in any way.
Greg Papa, voice of the Raiders, joining us as he does every single Wednesday at 7:35. Interesting about Derek Carr, because that is a storyline you see quite a bit from a lot of people who aren't calling games like you are in front of the team every day like you are, that Derek Carr, he must still be injured. He must still be suffering the effects, and this will come out later in the year. You don't think so, though. You don't think it's the injury.
No. Well, go away. I mean, he hurt his back, right?
Sure.
He hurt his back in Denver. He missed the Baltimore game. came back and played against the Chargers. Did he look hurt to you when he did the sprint left touchdown pass to Crabtree?
Not at all.
To win 31, that's a hell of a tough throw.
Yeah.
To sprint to your left and move your upper body, you can't do that with a bad back. I mean, the transverse process, I think, was an issue for a week or so. He didn't take a pain-killing shot to play the Charger game. He doesn't like doing it. I think it affected him that game. No, I think he's fine. I think he's got to develop a better pocket presence, and that means getting out of there when you need to get out of there or standing in there when you need to stand in there. And it's a believe me, that's a hard job. That's why, and I don't even care about the money, but that's what elite level quarterbacks do. They stand in there and take a shot. And you look at, why is Jimmy Garoppolo playing? This game against Houston, Dave, was a real revelation to me. And you love his footwork and his ball handling and all that, but that guy stood in there and took a shot from Jadeveon Clowney time and time again. Never dropped his head, stayed in there and took it. Now, some coaches may say, man, you're going to get hurt and you got to get out of there and you can't keep taking shots like that. And ultimately, he did get hurt in New England. He took a shot very similar. Kiko Alonso lit him up, and he never came back. And he blew his chance to play when Brady got hurt. But Derek has got to either get out of there. They've got to have an escape hatch for him. He's got to feel it and get out and keep plays alive. Close your eyes and try to remember Derek Carr making plays that were, you know, off script, where it didn't get out on time, and you got to pump it, and you got to roll, and you're rolling around. Sometimes they do it when they roll the pocket for him, and maybe you need to do that more. He's good at that, and he can roll left, and he can roll right. Maybe they needed to roll the pocket for him more, like the 49ers did when, you know, Kaepernick's pocket presence was the worst I've ever seen. Chip Kelly just started rolling the pocket. They knew he can't handle this. Let's just move it all together and get him out of there. So maybe they need, I don't say maybe, I think they do need to move him more to change the launch spot because he's having a hard time. And opponents know they are bull rushing the Raider guards. They're pushing them back into him. And he's not getting out of there. Now, they're not protecting well for him. It's not all on him. But I think as he really evolves into the next level generational-type quarterback, I mean, think of Roethlisberger with, you know, people grabbing his legs. Now, he's a big guy. Or Brady, the subtle movements to his left to keep it alive. Why is Brady maniacal about his workout regimen and his diet? Because he knows in order to stay in this league longer, he's got to be able to deliver the ball and get out of there. And his movement skill has gotten so much better, way better than when he was 25. He couldn't move like this. So he knows. And that's just the evolution that Derek is going to have to get to. He's going to have to figure out a way to handle the rush better, when to get out of there and when at times to stay in there and take a shot and deliver the ball and give his receivers more time to uncover.
Greg Papa with us, and I don't want to overplay this, but do you buy into the idea as well, to build on your point, that when you have a quarterback that will stay in, that will take a shot, that can also be contagious to the rest of the team? Your receiver's more likely to go high across the middle. They see their guy standing in there and taking a shot, and that builds that type of respect. And also, as I said, it can be a little bit contagious and spread throughout the field.
Yeah, I mean, that's the football, you know, tough guy mentality.
Sure.
But, you know, they got to do it on their own, whether Derek's not doing it. But it excites the team. But I just look at, how are you going to get out of this play? How is this play going to work? Are you going to throw it early and get rid of it before anybody gets any separation at all, and the cornerback just swats it away, and it's now you just lost the play? Well, that's not a good play. So how do you make the play better? Well, you either throw it to somebody else, but if nobody's open in that 2.3-second window, how does the play work? I'm just looking at it from a football functionality standpoint. Why are these plays not working? To me, whether he's seeing the field well enough or he's just going to his first read too soon and throwing to covered guys, I don't know. But to me, I think the biggest issue he's had this year has been just not throwing the ball to open players. And then I think later in the game, his play deteriorated. Late third quarter, for the first time I really saw Derek, I saw it in Washington too. He just got down. He just started to doubt. He looked confused. He, if anything, when he was younger, Dave, he didn't give a damn.
Yeah.
I remember an interception he threw against San Diego Jason Verrett intercepted it. It was a bad choice. He threw in the double coverage. I didn't like it at all. After the game, he said, you know, I'd throw it again. I don't care. And I thought, Jesus, that's not what you want. But, you know, I want that guy back. I don't want the guy that's dropping his head and not believing it, you know, not hitting Crabtree on the one seam route when he got open on that double move against their safety. And then even like the little shovel pass when he didn't hit DeAndre Washington, the one play that he was open. And those shovels are hard. But Derek has great dexterity, has great ball handling. He's got to make that through that little shovel pass. That's what players do. You know, Rodgers does that. The great ones do it. So in any event, he's just got to play better. And I think he's a product of the overall offense sucking early in the game. And then it just started to not roll. And Derek, historically, if he gets off to a bad start, it doesn't go well. And they got to make a real effort to get off to a better start to build his confidence. But in all regards, I think everybody's pulling him down around him. And then he's allowing it to go down. And he's not rallying it up like a good leader does. And I know Derek is. I know he is a good leader. I know he's a quality person. And he really cares and tries hard. That it's just to watch his head drop in the third quarter and kind of have a defeatist attitude when the game was still there. It was still a 16-0 game. Just make a couple of plays and you're right back in the game.
Greg Papa with us. We got a couple minutes left. I want to get outside the Raiders real quick with you on a couple of subjects. One in particular I'm sure you're passionate about, the Buffalo Bills and Buffalo Bills fans, and watching that game last weekend and played on a snow planet, and watching these fans sit through, of course, an overtime game while snow is building up on their hoods. Kyle and I were getting into it earlier about games like that and whether of course it's entertaining at times, but is it good or bad for the game? Is it the classic football weather? Are you okay with seeing games, especially big games, for example, decided like that, or is that an anomaly? Would you rather see domes all over the place?
Oh, God, no. I thought that was so much fun. When I was a kid, I still do. I go to Tahoe all the time. I love snow. I love playing in the snow. I love skiing and skating, and I love snow. And if you're from that area, you love it. And I loved it when it snowed on game day. I thought it gave the Bills a huge advantage. O.J. Simpson was a tremendous snow runner. I don't know how he developed it growing up in San Francisco and USC. And he could run in the snow, and Shady McCoy can run in the snow. I thought it was fabulous. The one thing that was odd to me is the amount of snowfall they allowed to stay on the field.
Yeah.
But I think they, talking to my family there, it snowed a foot during the game. And I think the league has to do a better job of having a lot of, you know, John Deere tractors and snow. Hell, my dad has a snow plow. Everybody in the parking lot has one. Just go, you know, every time there's a natural stop and play, when they take a two-minute commercial break, go out and plow this field off. That's not hard. So to allow the amount of snow, standing snow, to build up during the game was really shocking to me. I don't think I've ever seen a game, and I've seen a lot of snow games, and I've been in them, and they're fun. And in the crowd, when it's snowing that much, everybody's making snowballs. But you try to keep the field. They used to pay guys with shovels to come out. I don't know why there was so much ankle-deep snow during the game, which I think they got to address. But hell no, I don't want any domes. Now, would you want a Super Bowl decided that way? Probably not. But championship games, I mean, probably the most famous game in history was the Ice Bowl in Green Bay, and those are the elements. So, no, I love it. That's football. That's why Buffalo, you know, has an advantage that they have. It's why the Bears had an advantage all those years playing at Soldier Field. It's different than San Diego, you know, or L.A. It's just it gives those teams a real weather advantage. So, no, I think that's part of football. It was fun.
Well, Kyle tells me we have a minute left, so I'm building off of that question, what we talked about earlier in the week. Considering the conditions at times, considering the turnout and the fact that the Bills aren't exactly – it's not Title Town. Could you make an argument that Buffalo Bills fans could be the most diehard fans in American sports?
Oh, they love the Bills. Are you kidding me? I mean, from going to four straight Super Bowls and losing them all.
Yeah.
I remember when I was back in Buffalo right after the first Super Bowl loss when Norwood missed the kick. They had a parade. They had him at City Hall. You thought he made the kick and they won the Super Bowl. The guy missed the kick and you lost the Super Bowl. And they had him there at City Hall, give him the key to the city. I'm like, only Buffalonians would do this. I mean, Jesus. But that's just the way they are. And it's been that way, not just with the Bills. The Sabres have had so many heartbreaks from the Brett Hull and the crease against the Dallas Stars years ago. And they've never broken. They won a championship in the AFL in the mid-60s with Jack Kemp. But no, they love the Bills. The problem for me now, Dave, is I don't like the Bills anymore. They're in the way. So that
right.
win on Sunday, I'm watching it, and I'm rooting for the Colts because you know, Buffalo beat the Raiders, and now they're 7-6, and we're 6-7. It may come down to a wild card spot with them. And the real irony, you see who missed a kick in the snow in that game?
Sure did.
Adam Vinatieri.
Cost him 500 grand, probably.
Why didn't he miss the one in that net in the Foxborough game, the tough U game? He had to make that kick to hurt the Raiders.
Of course.
So Vinatieri is the – I think he's on my all-anti-Raider team now forever.
Oh, he's got to be, along with that ref. All right, it's Greg Papa with us each and every week, every Wednesday at 7:35. Not pulling any punches today and no reason to. We always appreciate your candor, and hopefully we get a win this weekend.
You had to bring up Walt Coleman at the end.
I didn't say the name.
The quarterback's arm is going forward.
Greg, on that note, have a wonderful week.
Take care, guys.
All right, you too. Bye. It's Greg Papa. Nobody's more scarred about the Tuck Rule game than Greg. If you get a chance, you ever get a chance, go to YouTube. Well, not you, Raider fan. I get it. But the rest of you, you go to YouTube and you watch the replay of Papa's call on that. It's about as incredulous as I've ever heard an announcer, and I don't blame him on the Tuck Rule. Don't blame him at all. I think Greg almost swore about 12 times.
I don't think there was anybody watching that game who was not incredulous at the call. Even Patriots fans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, wait, what?
What? Yeah, go straight to the casino, put it all down. We'll take a break. Kings next. Kings win last night. We got a lot of questions based on that. Also, we had the Salt Lake Tribune article. Now we have a Ringer piece on how the Kings have no direction. Now let's talk about that. The win, et cetera, all that stuff. It's Kings next on The Drive. Sports 1140 KHDK.